Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Her Show of Force by Mike Krentz, narrated by Kate Zane. Phase Zero, Shape. Chapter 1, March 21, 2003, Persian Gulf. Weapons spent. The FA-18 Hornet streaked over the coast of Iraq into total blackness over the Persian Gulf. At the controls, Lieutenant Commander Kate Scarlett Mahoney announced, "Feet wet," into her helmet microphone, climbed the jet to 3,000 feet, and let herself relax for the first time since the mission began 3 hours ago. Flashes of warning lights from the instrument panel interrupted her in mid-breath. Left engine fire. Kate pushed the fire extinguisher button and shut down the engine. The jet rolled left, as expected when flying with an unopposed right engine. She made the proper control corrections, confirmed the fire was out, and continued a gradual single-engine flight toward USS Constellation, CV-64, the aircraft carrier from which she had launched 3 hours earlier. The photo of Patrick smiled at her from where she'd pasted it to the instrument panel. Almost home, kid. The Hornet lurched into a violent left roll. Kate pushed the control stick to the right. No response. Kate reached between her legs as she announced her dilemma.
Lost controls. I'm ejecting.
She yanked the yellow black striped handle. The jet's canopy blew away a second before the ejection seat holding Kate shot into the overcast night. The crippled jet fighter plunged away toward the Persian Gulf.
Hang on tight, Patrick.
The acceleration force caused her to black out. In seconds, the seat separated, the parachute deployed, and Kate's limp body transitioned from projectile to falling leaf. The sudden deceleration and the groin straps yanking on her distended bladder jerked her into consciousness. So did the intense pain in her dislocated left shoulder. Patrick had disappeared from her mind. She peered up to confirm the dim outline of a full parachute. Her wingman circling overhead would report good shoot to Connie. Overcoming the pain in her shoulder, Kate inflated her flotation vest and snapped the waist lobes together. A glimpse of the carrier's distant light appeared against the black horizon, no doubt launching the rescue helo in her direction. She steadied her breathing. Less than 1,000 feet before water entry. When her boots hit the water, Kate released the parachute straps just before her body submerged. In seconds, she popped through the surface and used her uninjured arm and two muscular legs to swim away from the parachute. She floated on her back. Euphoria rolled over her in harmony with the sea swells.
Woo-hoo!
Besides her first combat sortie, delivering shock and awe to Saddam Hussein's Baghdad on this night, Scarlett Mahoney had survived an engine fire and shutdown, single-engine flight, catastrophic hydraulics failure, loss of flight controls, and low-altitude ejection. A water rescue would complete the scenario. The docs would fix her shoulder. Scarlett would fly again. She would reunite with Patrick. What more could a girl want? Chapter 2, March 22, 2003, San Bruno, California.
Happy birthday, dear Patrick. Happy birthday to you.
Aunt Colleen set the cake in front of Patrick as his friends and their mothers gathered around the table. He took a big breath and blew with all his might. 4 candles went out right away, but he needed a quick second puff to put out the 5th one. Everyone clapped and cheered. Patrick stared past the chocolate-frosted cake to the presents on a side table in the mall's party room. He couldn't wait to open them, especially the one in blue wrapping tied with a white ribbon. Aunt Colleen had said Mommy sent it all the way from Iraq. That must be far away. Mommy had been gone forever. Why didn't any of his friends' mommies ever go to Iraq? His aunt dished out the cake and ice cream. Patrick gobbled it down. Once they all ate, he could open presents. He got mad when some kids wanted seconds. Time came to open the gifts. A dump truck, an ambulance with flashing lights and a real siren, Power Rangers action figures, a transformer, and a tablet he could draw on then erase. Aunt Colleen had saved the present from Mommy for last. She made him listen to her read the card first. Dear Patrick, happy birthday. I miss you very much. They don't have malls or toy stores where I am, but I found something I hope you enjoy. I love you, Mom. He tore open the wrappings. His fingers touched something hard and leathery, a strange animal with a long neck and a lump on its back. Patrick wrinkled his face as he turned it over in his hands. It's a leather camel, Aunt Colleen said. Camels are animals that live near where Mommy's ship is. She got it on Liberty in Bahrain. Patrick searched all over the animal, but he could not find a switch. Maybe it needed batteries. He didn't see a battery hole. He tried to move the legs, but they were stiff as pencils. The neck, too. He handed it to Aunt Colleen. How does it work? The mommies giggled. It's a model, a beautiful leather model. It doesn't move or have batteries. Put it on the shelf in your room so when you look at it, you can think of Mommy. Patrick stuck out his lip and turned back to his new transformer. Later, Patrick and his best friend, May Lee, helped her mother and Aunt Colleen pack up the presents. He held on to the leather camel. Outside the party room, he saw a man watching them. At the mall exit, Aunt Colleen turned to May Lee's mother. I'll get the car and pick you up here. No point in carrying all this stuff through the garage. As soon as Patrick's aunt left, May Lee had to go to the bathroom real bad. Her mother sat Patrick on a bench. Wait right here while I take her to the ladies' room. Don't move. Your aunt will be right back. She took May Lee's hand and rushed into the bathroom. Patrick sat and examined his camel. Hi, son. The same man who had watched them leave the party room. His smile made Patrick shrink against the bench. The man pointed to a box of presents and the camel in Patrick's hand. Someone had a birthday party. Patrick nodded. How old are you? Patrick held up five fingers. 5 years old. You're a big boy, aren't you? Patrick looked away. He felt like crying. The man dropped to one knee. What's your name? Patrick stared at the floor. Patrick Walker. A car pulled up outside, and Aunt Colleen got out. When Patrick looked back, the man had left. Chapter 3, March 23, 2003, An-Nasiriyah, Iraq. Senses poised against surprise attack, the warriors of Amphibious Assault Vehicle Platoon, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 2nd Marine Regiment, inched across the dusty, flat terrain. They approached the northern Saddam Canal Bridge on the periphery of An-Nasiriyah, Iraq, 350 kilometers southeast of Baghdad. The company formed one element of Task Force Tarawa, charged to clear a path through the southern Iraq city for the 1st Marine Regiment rolling up from behind. With enemy fire in An-Nasiriyah suppressed, that fast-moving assault regiment could rush through unimpeded toward Baghdad. Three bridges over the Euphrates River opposed Task Force Tarawa. The first, on the city's outskirts, had already fallen. The other two, further into An-Nasiriyah itself, presented more formidable threats. Charlie Company was assigned to seize and control the Saddam Canal Bridge inside the city. The path to success lay through an environment where the enemy could entrap and ambush the U.S. force. Riding an AAV-7A1 assault vehicle near the rear of the task force advance,
Major Preston Davis, USMC, poster fit and poised even in dusty desert-hued battle dress, scrutinized the hostile surroundings. Sporadic radio traffic had reported a nearby ambush of a U.S. Army maintenance convoy. The convoy had suffered casualties and given up prisoners, including two female soldiers. Preston squinted against the bright sunlight. Here the Iraqis will stand and fight. From the beginning, Operation Iraqi Freedom had faced only token opposition, but now the conflict promised to turn grim. Preston sensed the nearby phantom enemy measuring his force. He sweated from the desert heat. Or was it the impending conflict? He turned to Doc Esperanza, the Navy hospital corpsman riding next to him. Doc, keep everyone hydrated.
You got it, Major.
Preston placed a hand on the young man's shoulder.
No matter what happens, Doc, do not charge into enemy fire without cover. Once they realize you're the corpsman, you become a prime target.
I know, sir. The medic shrugged at being told the obvious. Moments later, the sky rained brimstone and chaos. Rocket-propelled grenades and mortar rounds exploded all around. Automatic rifle fire sizzled from too many directions. Radios crackled with strident voices. Thunderclap explosions, whistling projectiles, and rattling cacophony filled the air. Vehicles exploded into plumes of black smoke. Those still mobile scrambled into defensive positions. Frantic voices shouted uncoordinated orders. Doc Esperanza jumped out of the vehicle and ran crouching toward the closest smoking vehicle. Preston forced his own legs and arms into action. His boots hit the sandy road just as the corpsman dove to the ground under a burst of automatic gunfire. Preston crouched low and hurried toward his doc. As the medic got up, another volley of gunfire kicked up sand around them. Preston tackled the corpsman and covered him with his own body. He kept the doc pinned beneath him until the enemy gunfire gave way to return fire from the U.S. Marines. Preston rolled aside. The corpsman sprang up and ran toward the smoking vehicles. Not thinking, Preston followed. A cloud of acrid smoke choked him. Through the fog, he saw dozens of Marines wounded or killed. He caught up to the corpsman, who pulled wounded Marines from a burning vehicle. Preston rushed forward to assist. Heat from the conflagration seared Preston's skin and clouded his vision. He grabbed a fallen Marine under the armpits and dragged him from the vehicle. Beneath one armpit, the man had only a bloody stump and a missing arm. Two stumps where legs used to be. Dead. Rifle and machine gun fire rattled the scene again. Preston dropped the dead man and hustled back to the shattered vehicle. Doc Esperanza bent over another fallen Marine. He stood and waved Preston away.
You don't belong here, Major. Get the hell out. Take cover, sir.
A whistle and a thud. The corpsman's throat burst open in a spray of blood and tissue. He grasped at his neck, eyes wide and white. Frothy blood spurted around his hands. The corpsman stumbled toward Preston and fell forward in front of him. His face thumped into the sand. Blood spurted from his neck for a few seconds, slowed to a trickle, then stopped. The doc didn't move. Preston turned his corpsman over. The gaping hole in the man's neck, no longer spewing blood or air, told the major what the lifeless eyes affirmed.
I killed my doc.
Phase 1. Deter. Chapter 4. April 8, 2012. South China Sea. USS Shenandoah, LCC 21. Captain Kate Mahoney awoke to the familiar ache in her left shoulder. Disoriented, she scanned the darkness. As the sleepy mist around her senses lifted, she recognized the rocking ocean motion, humming machinery noise, faint aroma of oil and metal,
and windowless confines of her stateroom in USS Shenandoah, the converted amphibious assault ship that served as flagship of the United States 7th Fleet. Kate rolled onto her back in the narrow bed, rack in Navy parlance, and reached above her head to flip on the bulkhead-mounted fluorescent lamp. Eyes squinting against the harsh glow, she found her glasses and looked at her watch. 04:30, Sunday morning. Kate had expected to sleep late while Shenandoah plowed the placid South China Sea toward Singapore. She needed a relaxed holiday routine now that the flagship neared the halfway point of its 90-day deployment from home base in Japan to Asian ports vital to U.S. interests. She swung her legs over the side of the rack and stretched, still wearing the olive-green Nomex flight suit from the previous day. A paperback romance novel lay opened on the desk where she'd dropped it. She undid her U.S. Navy regulation chignon and shook out the long auburn hair that tumbled over her shoulders. Gotta get it cut in Singapore. Kate returned the book to the shelf over the light fixture. Three steps from her rack, she sat at her desk, switched on the lamp, and booted up one of two computers connected to a single monitor. As the screen came to life, she calculated the time and date in California, on the other side of the international dateline. Just after 1:30 p.m. Saturday, a day behind here, Patrick might be online. Had less than a month passed since Kate left Patrick in Colleen's care and started the trans-Pacific journey to her next Navy challenge and adventure? It seemed longer. Logged onto the internet, Kate opened her Facebook page and scanned for messages and new posts. Nothing from Patrick, but the green dot next to his icon showed him logged on. Kate clicked the cursor over that icon and typed into the text box. Chapter 5. April 8, 2012. Yellow, West, Sea. ROKS, Buchan. Republic of Korea Navy, ROKN Commander Kwon Nam-young had just stepped out of his tiny shipboard shower when an urgent call shattered his morning routine.
Captain, we have an unidentified contact advancing on the NLL. Could be KPN with hostile intent. Please come to the bridge. On my way.
Kwon pulled on his drab blue working uniform with the brand new rank insignia and hurried out the door. In the passageway, he cursed the apparent threat to his first patrol as skipper of the Republic of Korea Navy, ROKN Corvette, ROKS Buchan. If the so-called Korean People's Navy, KPN, to the north, approached the northern limit line, NLL, with hostile intent, this day could be cataclysmic for him and the free nation he'd sworn to defend. When he reached the bridge, sweat beads dotted his forehead, despite the chill of harsh winter's reluctant withdrawal from the Korean peninsula. The officer of the deck reported,
"Contact now bearing 320, range 25 miles, moving southeast."
Kwon gazed at the radar scope. An ominous blip approached the northern limit line that divided Korean territorial waters between north and south. The blip appeared to be closing on Buchan.
KPN, he said. Hail it on the bridge to bridge.
The junior officer keyed the transmitter.
Vessel approaching northern limit line. This is Republic of Korea Warship 773. Please identify yourself and say intentions.
Silence.
I say again, vessel approaching NLL. This is ROK Warship 773. You approach Republic of Korea territorial waters. Acknowledge and say intentions.
No reply. North Korea People's Navy patrol ships often feinted at the NLL. The approaching vessel could break off at any minute, but as the ROKN patrol commander, Kwon must regard it as a legitimate threat. The Armistice Rules of Engagement, AROE, limited his options against the potential invader. He could not legally fire on the other vessel unless challenged. Should he prepare a warning shot?
Was this the initial sortie in an all-out assault on his homeland, or an isolated provocation from the new young leader's regime in the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK? Why choose this morning to harass a routine ROKN patrol? Did they mean to test his resolve? Kwon stood tall. They would find him a formidable adversary. He took the transmitter from the junior officer.
Vessel approaching NLL. This is the captain of ROK Warship 773. You encroach on ROK sovereign waters and place yourself in jeopardy. Acknowledge and say intentions.
25 miles to the northwest, the Korean People's Navy's Sarawan-class corvette continued southeast. Commander Kim Lee-chung, the veteran skipper, smirked at his ROKN opponent's bravado broadcast.
Nervous fool.
Kim did not lift his own transmitter.
We will make him a squirm more. Increase speed to 12 knots.
As the Sarawan sped up, the ROKN skipper's higher-pitched voice came back over the receiver.
Vessel approaching NLL. This is ROK Warship 773. Final warning. Reverse course or face dire consequences.
Commander Kim chortled.
This simpering mouse dares to provoke the tiger. Northern limit line indeed.
He spat on the deck.
Proceed on course. All full ahead. Sound general quarters.
He turned on his heel and left the bridge to his watch team. He would view the intensifying battle picture on the video display in the Combat Information Center below decks. On Buchan, Commander Kwon's heart raced as the threatening radar blip closed to 15 miles from his ship. They did intend to test him. Rivulets of sweat streaked his face as he shouted commands.
Sound general quarters! Prepare to fire cannon! Arm Exocet missiles! Get Second Fleet on a secure line!
Should this confrontation go awry, Kwon refused to become a sacrificial offering for his ROKN superior's political face-saving. He must co-opt the chain of command now to affirm his intentions. He had to expect the North Korean ship to cross the NLL. When it got within range, 12 miles, but Kwon could wait for 10. He planned a warning blast from Buchan's 76mm cannon across the invader's bow. His KPN adversary would get the next move, but not for long.
AROE be damned.
At close range, Kwon dared not allow the North Korean to fire on him first. The warning shot should prove his resolve and stop this childish game. If the Marauder kept his course, Kwon resolved to cram an Exocet missile into the detested communist's belly. Chapter 6, April 7th, 2012, San Bruno, California. Perched on the back of Shenzhen Tzu, the giant turtle, Fan Pan Zhe scanned the alien terrain. The unexplored realm of Pandaria bore no resemblance to Azeroth, not even before the Cataclysm. Fan Pan must hasten to find Horde allies for the first quest to win the global war against the Alliance and restore order to a world broken by the Cataclysm. With the mind-hand skill of a nascent drone pilot, Patrick Walker manipulated the keyboard and mouse to maneuver his avatar across World of Warfare on the computer screen. Just past his 14th birthday, Patrick's experience-honed gaming skills surpassed those of many older gamers. Fan Pan ventured into the lush green jade forest, seeking a monk. He needed chi energy to enhance his warrior strength for melee attacks against the Verming and Mantoids. The Horde must overcome these new Pandaren races to move on to the next phase. To his delight, on the screen, a monk approached from the forest. The text box popped open.
Fuchu. I am Fuchu Jia, the Avenger. Come with me to the Temple of the Jade Serpent.
Patrick's fingers rippled over the keyboard. Fan Pan.
I am Fan Panja, the rebel. With our martial arts and joint force, we will win.
Fuchu.
Greetings, Fan Pan. Let us lead the Horde to vengeance against the Alliance.
The world will be ours.
Together, the new friends charged into the Jade Forest. They gathered other players as they went, building a powerful army. The Horde would destroy the despots of the Alliance and reunite Azeroth under Pandaren influence. When the Horde achieved ultimate victory, Fanpanje and Fuchuje would become the reigning masters. They came under a fierce assault from a gang of Alliance warriors and Magi. Fanpan executed his spinning crane kick that took down all enemies within 8 yards. Fuchu rallied orcs and dwarves to protect Fanpan's flank. Other Horde allies rushed to join the melee. Fanpan and Fuchu deployed their most skillful martial arts. The Alliance attack faltered. A high-pitched beep invaded Patrick's headset. His mother on Facebook. He ignored the interruption and kept his mind on the game. Beep, beep. No use. She knew he was online and she would persist until he responded, or she would give up in anger, for which he would later pay. He typed into the game's text box, Fanpan, AFK, back soon. Patrick opened his web browser and clicked the Facebook tab. His mom's message appeared. Scarlet, hey, Patrick. He used his Facebook screen name. Pat Walk. Hi, Mom. From where had she last emailed him? Somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. Scarlet. How are you? Pat Walk. Okay. Scarlet. Just okay? Like she even cared. Pat Walk. Fine, Mom. Scarlet. I'm sorry I didn't email or text you sooner. It's been crazy here. Pat Walk. Yeah. Her life was always crazy. Scarlet. How's school? Pat Walk. Okay. Scarlet. Studying hard? Pat Walk. Hard enough. Scarlet. How are your grades? Pat Walk. Okay. Could we get this over? Scarlet. What's your favorite subject? Pat Walk. History, I guess. Scarlet. What do you like about history? Patrick pounded his forehead. Jeez. Pat Walk. It's easy. Scarlet. You like it because it's easy? Pat Walk. Yeah. Scarlet. What do you take that's hard? Pat Walk. Nothing, they're all easy. Scarlet. What's your least favorite? Pat Walk. Math. Scarlet. Why math? Pat Walk. Teacher's a jerk. Scarlet. How come? Pat Walk. She's stupid. Scarlet. How so? Pat Walk. Dumb homework. Scarlet. You do your homework, right? Pat Walk. Of course. This was beyond pain. Patrick split the screen and rejoined his team. He would play and text with his mom at the same time. Scarlet. How's your social life? Pat Walk. Huh? Scarlet. Friends, girlfriend, whatever. Pat Walk. Jeez, Ma. In the game, he tried a spinning crane kick, but the texting distraction foiled his timing and the attack failed. The enemy force had doubled, and the errant kick had diminished Fanpan's energy. Patrick recharged his avatar for another counterattack. Meanwhile, Fuchu and the others held the attackers at bay. His mother continued her texting attack. Scarlet. I'm interested in your life, Patrick. I want to know how you're doing. I miss you. Patrick rolled his eyes. Yeah, right. Pat Walk. I'm fine, Ma. Anything else? He rejoined the game. Fuchu had gained power while orc reinforcements arrived. They could still win the battle. His mother continued to fill the Facebook text box. Scarlet. I'm fine, too, in case you wondered. Some days are better than others. I wish I could be with you. Patrick ignored her text and led his charges into the fray. Outnumbered and outmaneuvered, they died within minutes. Fuchu retreated. Patrick left the game. Frustrated, he resumed the Facebook chat. Pat Walk. I miss you, too, Mom. Scarlet. Thanks for saying that. Pat Walk. When will I see you? Scarlet.
When I get home from this current underway period in about a month, I'll take leave and visit you there.
Patrick sighed. Pat Walk, I'd rather visit you in Japan.
Scarlet.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?